Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, this is the show. This is the show, the pulse of conservative talk on the internet. It's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show. We don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. And we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. We're glad to have you aboard this week. I've got so much news, I'm not sure if I can get through it all, but I will. I'll have to go fast, and you'll have to listen quickly. I was down at the dump. No, not down in the dumps. I was down at the dump, dumping a bunch of household refuse after a four-month bathroom renovation. Not even a renovation. Just a tile job. 4 months. Anyway, dumping a whole lot of household refuse. And I've got to tell you, I love the dump. I loved it. It was so great. First of all, the dump is one of modern civilization's greatest boons to public health. The ability for thousands, tens of thousands, even millions of people to discard their refuse in a healthy manner. It just gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling just thinking about it. And I drove out to the dump out in Aurora, Colorado. And it reminded me of my, not even teenage years, my pre-teenage years, when me and my brother, Scott, and our friends, we used to go down to the city dump, which was only a mile or so from our house, so we could walk down to the dump. And the city dump in McCamey, Texas, was just a giant gash in the earth, opened up by earth-moving equipment, and filled with garbage, and it was constantly burning. It was 100, maybe 200 yards long, 40 yards wide, and easily 30, 40 feet deep at any given time, and it was constantly on fire. And so we used to go, and we would hunt up aerosol cans. We would scour the dump to find aerosol cans, and then we would place them strategically where the dump was burning, and then we would run through this giant gash in the earth, and we would play landmines, and we would try to run through as the aerosol cans exploded. It was so great. I'll tell you what, I got into a lot of things later in life, but I can tell you that there was very few things that produced as much sheer joy as playing landmines in the city dump with my brother Scott. Anyway, going to the dump over this weekend brought back old memories, and I got to see this incredible wrecking machine. It was so awesome. It was a giant bulldozer. It was an oversized bulldozer, two stories tall, and the tracks had been replaced with these giant metal wheels, and the wheels were like four or five wheels stacked on top of each other and slid onto the axle, and in place of the tracks, there were these giant metal studs on these wheels just designed to wreck through trash. And the old boy driving that bulldozer, he must have been in his little corner of heaven. He drove that bulldozer over a 10 or 12 foot high pile of trash at a good 15, 20 miles an hour. I mean, he was flying and just ripped through the trash and dropped the shovel and piled it up. It was so fun.
I bet he doesn't feel that way.
You don't think he feels like he's in his own private little paradise?
Probably first day.
Well, just about any other guy listening to this show would consider that a little piece of heaven. Anyway, after I got all my trash out of the truck and dumped it, I sat there for 4 or 5 minutes just watching this wrecking machine, and I was inspired. I just felt like this is civilization. Anyway, and a good time was had by all, yeah. But the news of the day, let's see here. We want to start in our celebrity news file, as we're often wont to do here at the start of the show. This is a story from Politico, and apparently there was an interview with the celebrity website WWTDD.com. What would the dumb doofuses do? I don't know what that stands for, WWTDD. But they interviewed Snoop Dogg. He's a rapper. Snoop Dogg, the rapper, was asked who he'd like most to get high with, because Snoop Dogg is famous for his love of marijuana, according to the story here.
So he's lying.
Well, yeah, he says he's Snoop Lion, but I wasn't even going to acknowledge that. He'll always be Snoop Dogg to me. We have none of his records, or tapes, or CDs, or downloads. What do they call them? MP3s. We don't have any of that. Anyway, Snoop Dogg was interviewed by WWTDD.com, asked who he'd most like to smoke dope with, and he said, Bill Clinton. That's right. I know he ain't the president no more, so he can inhale. Unquote. That was Snoop in his interview. According to Politico, Snoop also said he'd like to try to get the current president high as well. But he said, I don't know if I bring that stuff into White House and all, you know, with all that security and all. Anyway, this brings us to a brand new segment on the show. Advice from an angry black woman. That's our new segment. Advice from an angry black woman. She read the interview, and here's what the angry black woman had to say to Snoop. I believe we can roll tape.
Snoop, are you crazy? What you talking about, man? Did you know Lil Wayne's in a coma, boy? He's about to meet Jesus. You better watch what you say, Snoop. You must be crazy. Talking all that trash about smoking dope with the president. You better watch yourself, Snoop.
Unquote. Advice from an angry black woman for Snoop Dogg. And that's all there is on that. There's not much else to that story. But let's go from one celebrity to another. Mayor Michael Bloomberg follows Snoop Dogg here on the Worldview. And I had been wondering, ladies and gentlemen, how it was that after the Newtown Massacre there in Connecticut, how come it was the New York City mayor that was the face of the new gun control, gun confiscation movement? And at first I thought, well, you know, Connecticut, a lot of people in Connecticut, they work in New York. Maybe Mr. Bloomberg took this personally and decided to become the crusader for gun control, for lack of a better term. But it turns out Mr. Bloomberg didn't just happen to be in the right place at the right time. According to the politicalticker.com, no, it's not, it's politicker.com, when the smoke cleared at a movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, in the wee hours of a Friday morning last July, 12 people were dead, 58 were injured, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg was in New York readying an assault of his own. Bloomberg's assault involved carpet bombing Washington with millions of dollars from the mayor's immense fortune and a media blitz that would be deployed following the next massacre. So Bloomberg anticipated another massacre after the Aurora Theater massacre, and indeed he proved to be right. Not that one would have to be a genius to predict the next massacre, but Mr. Bloomberg prepared. He decided, according to Politicker, he decided to force the conversation himself just a few hours after the shooting in Aurora. Mr. Bloomberg was emailing members of his staff, preparing a media offensive. The next time a tragedy like Aurora occurred, Mr. Bloomberg vowed to be ready. And indeed, as soon as Newtown took place, Mr. Bloomberg's anti-gun plan went into place, driven by data and paid for largely with his own fortune. Mr. Bloomberg paid for it with his own money. That's right, Newtown happened, and Mr. Bloomberg was ready. So this is what we're up against, folks. Mr. Bloomberg is a true believer in his ability to save mankind. He is a humanist crusader. He's the archetype of the new humanist crusader. He is misguided, but I believe he is sincere, willing to spend millions of his own dollars to push his twisted, misguided agenda. And he was ready and he was preparing. So this is just a note to go out to all my Christian friends who, like me, are preparing to take over the world when the humanists drop it and break it. We need to be ready and we need to be prepared. That's why I'm so glad to have had the opportunity to prepare over the years with a number of people within my inner circle so that when the humanists like Bloomberg drop it and break it, that we will be here to take over and save you ignorant heathens from yourselves. I know, you can thank me later, okay? Now, another crusader. We go from one crusade to another. We go to Bono. I'm sorry, it's Bono. Bono, Irish rocker. He was talking with CNN. I'm sorry, the story is from CNN. Bono took the stage at the TED 2013 conference. TED stands for Technology, Education, and Design 2013. This is a 100% humanist charity and faith organization. Yeah, there's not a mention of God. There's not a mention of right and wrong or righteousness or sin or damnation or any of that. This is 100% humanist, and this is what is replacing the church as the church shrinks back onto the ash heap of history. At least the professing church. This is what's replacing it. Events like TED 2013, TED. It was a conference out in Long Beach, and he took to the stage and told his audience that he had embraced his inner nerd. Yes, he says, exit rock star, enter the evidence-based activist. I call myself a factivist. Unquote. Bono said he's embraced his inner nerd. Now, he did that while wearing a $5,000 pair of sunglasses, but that's beside the point. Mr. Bono gave a speech that was a call to action to the young humanists in the crowd there. And he says he wants to eliminate extreme global poverty. I want to eliminate it. And it's already been cut in half over the past 20 years from 43% back in 1990. To only 21% in 2010. And if the current trajectory can be continued, extreme poverty could be virtually eliminated by 2030. Unquote. That was Bono. And by the way, virtually eliminated means it will not be eliminated. But we appreciate Mr. Bono's efforts in his very slick sunglasses there. Preaching to the humanists. Maybe we don't appreciate it. We don't really appreciate it all that much. We don't appreciate the humanists trying to replace God. That's a tack that goes way, way back, all the way back into Genesis, if you care to read your Bible. And God doesn't like it very much either. And so we're with him, and so we're fairly annoyed. All right. Now, speaking of humanists working every day to deny all that is good and right and just, let's go to Maryland. from the Baltimore Sun, last Friday, the Maryland House of Delegates cast a final vote on Governor Martin O'Malley's proposed bill repealing the death penalty in Maryland. House approval sent the bill to the governor's desk for his signature. The Senate approved it the week prior, and now Maryland is set to become the 18th state in the nation to abolish capital punishment. And capital punishment hasn't been going that well in Maryland as it is. As we read the story here, the Baltimore Sun reports that just 5 men have been executed in the past 37 years. Now, I did not have the crack research staff get on and research how many murders have occurred in Maryland in the past 37 years, but we're going to guess that it's more than 5. But only 5 men have been executed in the past 37 years. Maryland has 5 men on death row, all convicted of murder. The oldest crime dates back to 1983. 1983, that's when me and my brother were running through the city dump playing landmines with aerosol cans. That's how long ago that was. A message to Governor Martin O'Malley and the legislators and the rest of the ruling class there in Maryland. You may become the 18th state to abolish capital punishment, but you will not abolish the death penalty. No. You will only redirect it upon your citizens, and of course you will intensify the effects of it, and you will negate the righteous possibility that the death penalty gives every government to produce repentance in the criminal and fear in the hearts of those who would do evil. So you can abolish capital punishment, but the death penalty is going to come back on you, all of you in the secular, heathen, humanist ruling class there. In Maryland in particular, in this case, but that's a message to all you filthy, unwashed heathens out there. Nominate one person to be there when the hammer falls down. I want to nominate Governor Martin O'Malley to be there. Yeah, right on him, right on his head. All right, that just about does it for Maryland and the greater Eastern Seaboard in general. But let's move to the justice file. I may have found the origin, or at least the type of story that gave rise to a famous American colloquialism. In fact, it may be a global colloquialism. Let's go to the Daily Mail in London reporting on a story out of, here in America, as a matter of fact. It's a case, the Daily Mail says, that has shocked the nation. Prosecutors state that an inebriated girl was taken to a number of parties by a group of drunk teenage boys. They were supporting her to walk when she was not physically capable. The prosecution claims that the group of boys later assaulted the girl while she lay unconscious, and you can imagine I need not get into details about what happened. Now, the attorney for the boys, number one, argues that she was drinking voluntarily and left willingly with the group of boys who later allegedly assaulted her. It's hard to say allegedly since there is cell phone video of the assaults that some of the kids posted online. So that's the first line of defense. He says, hey, she was drinking with them voluntarily. She left with them. Secondly, he says, she did not at any point affirmatively say no to any of the high school football players who assaulted her. The attorney said of the girl, quote, the person who is the accuser here is silent, just as she was silent that night, and that's because, says the lawyer, there was consent, unquote. Yeah, so you've heard the old saying, first kill all the lawyers. This is the type of story that leads people to say that. Now, the two football players who were accused have been convicted, but that does not negate what this lawyer has said. And on Judgment Day, I believe that he will be spun down into a particularly dark, hot corner of hell for this. First, kill all the lawyers, they said. And there you have it. All right. Now, speaking of lawyers, let's go to the politics file from CNSNews.com. This is a story that is really just typical of the culture missing the larger point. Not just the culture, but the post-conservative media. Yeah, you know, all the alleged conservative talking heads from Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly all the way on down to the very bottom of the food chain, you know, which would be, I think, Hugh Hewitt would be the bottom of that food chain. For that whole post-conservative media that has people convinced that they're somehow conservative, they just missed the larger points. And, well, let's just read the story. From CNS News, Colorado and Washington State have approved measures that legalize the use of marijuana. And Barry Ho says that his Justice Department will no longer prosecute potheads, pot users, in these stoner states. Obama said, quote, "We've got bigger fish to fry," unquote. Now, CNS News asks, will Obama also respect states that pass legislation in defiance of federal law when it comes to firearms? Well, they go on to point out that Ohio, Kentucky, Idaho, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Texas, and Kansas all have legislation in the works to defy whatever national gun control bills, laws, I should say, come out of Washington. Well, I have a question for CNS News. This is a decent point. I have no qualms with this point, pointing out the hypocrisy of a federal government that says it will not intervene when it comes to smoking dope and corrupting children, but have decided to intervene on the issue of firearms. But I just want to ask, what the hell were you people doing when abortion was legalized? Can I just ask that question? All of you people who are over 60, who are in the conservative media, who are conservative leaders, where were you people when the federal government federalized the legalization of the murder of innocent people and there were no great movements like there is now? Now that they've come for the guns. And I just want to let you people know that there are just as many. I name the states here: Ohio, Kentucky, Idaho, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas. These are all states that are committed to resisting the federal encroachment on the God-given right to keep and bear arms. Well, the personhood movement has just as many efforts in just as many states to try to wrench back from the federal government the God-given personhood of every innocent child. And I would just ask you people at CNS News and you people in the post-conservative media, what exactly is more essential to your liberty? Is it your life or your guns? Now just think about that for a minute. And consider the fact that if perhaps we put things right regarding that fundamental right to life that is also a God-given right, that perhaps the federal government would not have morphed into a leviathan that's now going to take away your guns. Once you hand over your children to them, it's kind of hard to argue that they should let you keep your Smith & Wesson. So I'm calling on the post-conservative media to become conservative and stand up for the right to life. And then I might listen to you on the gun issue. But as of right now, I find your arguments tiresome. As a matter of fact, I know. And I'm going to keep my guns, and I'm going to keep my, what was the magazine limit here in Colorado? I believe we have enacted a 15-round magazine, or was it 17 rounds? I forget what it is. But if I don't have, I don't know if I have a 17-round magazine. But, well, I don't really need one, frankly. If you need a 17-round magazine, well, I mean, you might just want to brush up on your skills. And if you don't realize that by handing over the right to life to a heathen, atheistic, God-hating, hell-bound government, that you've undermined all the liberties that you consider sacred, well, then you might need to brush up on your conservatism, because you have become a post-conservative media masquerading as something resembling conservatism. But those of us who are actually conservatives, we ain't buying it. So there. All right. Now, we move from gun control to something much more disgusting. I hate to do this, my dear. Looking over at my extremely attractive audio engineer. And knowing that that whenever I talk about these stories, I mean, her skin crawls and it makes her fairly uncomfortable. But I've got to talk about this. There's a couple in Michigan who, a homosexual couple, and they're planning on getting married. A couple will be the first homosexual couple to marry in the state of Michigan under the amended Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians marriage statute. Yes, apparently the Band of Odawa Indians, they have their own little sovereign government there on the reservation, and they've signed a new pact. They signed it last week to legalize homosexual marriage. And according to PetoskeyNews.com, the tribal sovereignty will protect their marriage bill from both a 2004 Michigan constitutional amendment and the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, and homosexual Indians will be allowed to get married there on the reservation. The couple in question, do I have their names? Do I even want to give their names? Well, one of them's 53 years old, and one of them's 60 years old. And they claim that they've been together for 30 years in a committed, devoted relationship. And they met on active duty in the Navy in 1993 while stationed in Orlando. Well, like I said, folks, they're not all heroes in the military. And, well, especially the Navy. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but if you're familiar with Winston Churchill's opinion of what it was that made the British Navy work, he said famously, "Sodomy, rum, and the lash." Well, these two met in the United States Navy back in the early 90s, and now they want to get married. In 2012, the Odawa tribe adopted a resolution to accept homosexual marriage, but they've had to put it through several votes of the tribal elders before they finally passed it, waiting for the last two conservative Indians to die off so that they could install homosexual marriage there. Now, the Odawa tribe, according to this article, will become only the third tribe behind the Coquille tribe of Oregon and the Suquamish tribe of Washington to accept homosexual marriage under its sovereign governmental laws. Yeah, and I know. People accuse us of bringing the red man smallpox. Well, now the white liberals have brought them homosexual marriage. And, well, I mean, this is true because there it is right there in black and white. And the wedding is going to go off here in the next few weeks. These two former heroes from the Navy plan to get married there. And I wonder how the Great Spirit feels about all that. Well, I'm the Great Spirit, if there were one, he would be offended. All right. So there we go. That's worse than slipping smallpox into their blankets, in my opinion. All right. Now, speaking of that, from the politics file, from Newsmax.com, Republican Ohio Senator Rob Portman has told newspapers that he now supports homosexual marriage. That's right. I told you, this is like the post-conservative show here. We're covering all the post-conservatives. Portman, who co-sponsored the Defense of Marriage Act back in when he was in the House of Representatives back in 1996, now says that he has changed his position after his 21-year-old son, Will, a junior at Yale, told him that, well, Dad, I'm a homosexual. He says, "Dad, I'm gay." And Mr. Portman changed his position on the entire issue. In fact, he wrote an op-ed piece in Friday's Columbus Dispatch headlined, quote, "Gay couples also deserve a chance to get married." That's what Rob Portman said. Just unbelievable. Can we quote Mr. Portman? Mr. Portman says, "I have come to believe that if two people are prepared to make a lifetime commitment, the government shouldn't deny them the opportunity to get married." Apparently, Portman's son, Will, told him that homosexuality was not a lifestyle he had chosen. And so Rob Portman said, Jane, my wife and I are proud. We're proud of him for his honesty and for his courage in sodomizing other men. Apparently that's the definition of a hero these days. You sodomize other men and then tell other people about it, and now you're courageous. Portman said his own position against homosexual marriage was, quote, rooted in my faith tradition, that marriage is a sacred bond between a man and a woman, but he realized he wanted all three of his children to be able to lead happy, meaningful lives with people they love. So Mr. Portman has now consented to the fact that his son sodomizes other men and then tells other people about it. Portman said he ultimately believes the Bible's themes of love and compassion override other considerations. He doesn't say what those other considerations are, but it's probably the Bible's condemnation of homosexuality as a capital crime. Mr. Portman apparently thinks that love and compassion override that, proving that he misunderstands love and compassion. He says he now agrees with British Prime Minister David Cameron, who holds that conservatives should support gay marriage. Indeed, in a true post-conservative manner. What is a conservative, of course, except one who supports homosexual marriage? We conservatives believe, is this a quote from the British fellow? We conservatives believe in personal liberty and minimal government interference in people's lives. We also consider the family unit to be the fundamental building block of society, said post-conservative. I don't even think he's a conservative, is he? David Cameron? Isn't he a Labour Party goon? I have no idea. Portman says one way to look at it is that homosexual couples' desire to marry doesn't amount to a threat, but rather a tribute to marriage. A tribute, now. And a potential source of renewed strength for the institution of marriage. Rob Portman, post-conservative leader. Surely someone around him is bound to tell him. What else? Oh, Portman even quoted Ronald Reagan, saying that... quoting that Ronald Reagan had said that all great change in America begins at the dinner table. And that's how it happened for me, unquote. Said Rob Portman. That's unfortunate to hear that it happened at the dinner table. That's a terrible place to find out that your son is a sexual deviant, you know. He's trying to eat. That had to be pretty rough. What's that now?
Once they can get married.
Now, once they can get married, yeah.
They're not going to have no more, outside
of... No, hon. These are committed homosexuals committed to a lifelong relationships. Didn't you hear the last story?
No.
Of course that's what's going to happen. How could you even doubt that two homosexual men would be anything but lifelong committed partners? To even question that, I think, is homophobic. You're homophobic. Yeah. I'm going to accuse you right now. Yeah. I don't think you can get out of that one. All right, now more from the politics file. From Columbus, Ohio, the Associated Press reports, the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party says that the state GOP will continue to stand behind U.S. Senator Rob Portman, who has announced his support for homosexual marriage. But the GOP party chairman does admit he may be a bit less enthusiastic about Portman standing behind him. Now, that's definitely a homophobic thing to make a joke like that. What's this fella's name? Let's see here. He's Bob Bennett. He's the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party, and he says he stands behind. He says he respects the senator's right. That's it. That is Senator Portman. He respects the senator's right to make up his own mind, and the party will stand behind Portman. A note to post-conservative GOP chairman Bob Bennett. God hates the man who does what is right in his own eyes. I mean, have you read the Bible? Do you even have a Bible? Probably not. But if you look at the idolatry of Micah back in the book of Judges, you'll see the opinion God has of men who do right in their own, do what's right in their own eyes and make up their own minds about things. And Mr. Bennett, God hates men like you who encourage leaders, government leaders, to make up their own minds on issues that God has already made up his mind about. When you encourage people to make up their minds in opposition to God, you make yourself an enemy of God. Now, this reminds me, I was having a conversation with a professional associate earlier this week, and I was revealing my conservative views to this person, and she said, "Doug, what would you do if one of your kids comes to you one of these days and says, 'Daddy, I'm gay'?" Well, I told her, well, I certainly would not endorse homosexual marriage and the wholesale destruction of Western civilization, okay? What I would do was I would love my child enough to warn them about the behavior, to tell them God's opinion that it's criminal behavior and that it's a threat to their life, both here on this earth and eternally. And I would encourage them to repent. And I would let them know that if you decide to publicly identify yourself as a homosexual in front of God and everybody, I would do the right thing in Christian love, and I would disown that child.
God is merciful. God is good. Lord have mercy.
I wish you would.
I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Kind of ironic that you play a Billy Squire bump after that story. You know, there's, you know, he went through that whole period, you know, the Andy Warhol period. Anyway, I have to do some research and find out if that boy ever got married.
He did.
Oh, he did?
I think.
Married to a woman? I hope so. I certainly hope Billy did get married to a woman. All right, now let's move on from politics to science. We jump right in to the science, really, file. The commander of the U.S. Pacific Forces was at Cambridge. This is a story from weaselzippers.us. What is that? A lot of times, ladies and gentlemen, I read these stories, and I don't necessarily check all that carefully as to where they're from. I'm not sure I would ever pull down a story from weaselzippers.us. But here it is from Cambridge, America's top military officer in charge of monitoring hostile actions by North Korea, escalating tensions between China and Japan, and computer attacks traced to China, has provided an unexpected answer when asked, what is the biggest long-term security threat in the Pacific region? What did America's top military officer in charge of such things say? His answer was climate change. That's right. Navy Admiral Samuel J. Locklear III says climate change is that he says it will cripple the security environment, probably more likely than the other scenarios we all often talk about. You know, the North Koreans with their nuclear threats and their missiles and the Chinese and the Japanese and the Senkaku Islands and all that. No, no, it's climate change. He says, people are surprised sometimes to hear me answer. Yes, Admiral, I think that's an understatement. No, they're not all heroes. They're not all heroes. Climate change. He says, He says you have the real potential in the not too distant future of nations being displaced by a rising sea level. As if the planet's going to heat up so fast that people are literally going to be drowned on the coast if they don't flee to the hills. Mr. Locklear, Admiral, he's responsible for operations from California to India, and he's working with Asian nations to stockpile supplies in strategic locations. Those hills that I just mentioned that people could flee to, they're stockpiling MREs. On an unrelated note, China last month directed one of its Navy radars at a Japanese warship near the disputed Senkaku Islands there. That's right, Senkaku. I don't call them the Doyu Islands because I'm with the Japanese on that. Why? Because my wife's Japanese. And I happen to have lived in Japan, and I happen to be with the Japanese on the whole issue of these disputed islands for my own personal reasons. I think that the issue of the Senkaku Islands is far more important than global warming. I can assure you of that. Oh, and by the way, unrelated, but North Korea has threatened to launch a nuclear weapon against the United States. But as far as we know, North Korea is not emitting a whole lot of greenhouse gases. So apparently they're not much of a threat. So all this is going on. You've got the Chinese, the Japanese, you've got the North Korean madmen. And I'm going to get to something about the Chinese that'll actually make the hair on the back of your neck stand up here in just a minute. But Locklear says he's increasingly focused on the highly destabilizing force that is the fact that ice is melting and the seas are getting higher. He says, I'm not a scientist. Yeah, okay. No, please, I do. Please. He says, I'm not a scientist, but the islands of Tarawa and Kiribati, they're contemplating moving their entire population to another country because their islands are not going to exist anymore. The U.S. military, he said, is beginning to reach out to other armed forces in the region about the issue. I'm sure the Chinese are happy to sit down and discuss global warming with Admiral, not a scientist, Samuel Locklear. He says of global warming, he says if it goes bad, you could have hundreds of thousands or millions of people displaced, and then security will start to crumble pretty quickly. See, and we thought there were threats from other countries who might be hostile to us, but it's actually the world that's angry with us, right? Isn't that what Gore? Al Gore, didn't he say that? The world is angry. The world has a fever. It's angry with us. It's going to come and get us. Going to drive us into the hills is what it's going to do. All right. In an unrelated political story from Moscow, we've all heard about North Korea this week, rattling their sabers, as talking heads like to say, threatening to launch missiles. They even did launch some missiles into the Sea of Japan and threatening to launch nuclear-tipped missiles. Well, as part of a plan to deploy additional ballistic missile interceptors to counter North Korea, the United States has effectively canceled the final phase of a Europe-based missile defense system. Yeah. So you all remember the conversation that was surreptitiously recorded between Barry Ho and Medvedev, the Russian, when he said, Barry said, I'll have a lot more leeway after this next election. Please, sir. Transmit that message to Vladimir. You remember that, right? Well, here it is. This is the end of missile defense in Europe, what Barry had promised. But I don't know that this is necessarily a plot by Barry just because he's a stone Marxist. I don't know. I think this could be the result of what happens when you're broke and you have a madman in North Korea and you've got to get some missiles over there and you're so broke that you can't have any missiles in Europe. It's probably a combination of the two. All right. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. I apologize. Wow, you know, whenever I mentioned Defense Secretary Leon Panetta, I always had to kind of clear my throat. But with Chuck Hagel, I have to actually suppress the urge to projectile vomit. Who's calling? on the bat phone here. We have a call coming into the studio. It's unauthorized, by the way. My extremely attractive audio engineer is going to try to deflect the telephone interruption. Let them know that they're not allowed to call at this time of the day. All right. Who was that, Vladimir? Did you transmit the message to him?
Michelle.
That was Michelle Obama herself. Yeah, having dinner later with her and Vladimir. Can I get Pentagon officials said longstanding objections by Russia played no role in the decision to reconfigure the missile interceptor program, take it out of Europe, and put it over there with pointed at Kim Jong-un. Obama administration officials acknowledge potential benefits of the decision, as it may be well received over there in Moscow. But the Obama administration does insist that there's still an absolutely firm commitment to a European missile defense system. So why would you modify firm commitment with the adjective absolutely? Oh, I know. It's because you're lying. That's why. All right. Now, unfortunately, I can't do that story because we're rapidly running out of time. And I don't want to get to this until I cover this. This is one more from the science. Really? File. NASA. NASA says that Curiosity, which is humanity's most powerful rover to land on Mars, has made a startling discovery. They say they found a habitable environment that is so benign and supportive to life that probably, if this water was around as it appears to have been, you would have been able to drink it, they say. They say they've found minerals in the rocks that the discovery is based on the chemical analysis of powder that the rover recovered after drilling a hole in a rock. The powder from the drilling, according to Lightyear's blogs over at CNN, the powder from the drilling turned out to have a wealth of chemicals in it, including sulfur, nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, phosphorus, and carbon. These are the ingredients for life, scientists say. Yes, perhaps Mars could have supported life, and we base that on the findings of sulfur, nitrogen, hydrogen, oxygen, and phosphorus, even carbon. They're so excited. And I just want to ask all of you scientists who are part of the secular humanist cabal that is hell-bent on taking humanity straight to hell, if you're so excited about sulfur, nitrogen, hydrogen, and phosphorus on Mars, what about the DNA, hair, fingernails, mouth, eyes, heart, and lungs of a human fetus? It's the Weekly Worldview, folks, and we are rounding third and headed for home. Now, on the heels of that question, to all you secular humanists who worship science, when it's convenient, Mars and all that. Now let's get to China, ladies and gentlemen. From the war file, Chinese doctors have just released data on their on what the Financial Times calls their controversial family planning policy that has now been instituted for 40 years. Since 1971, doctors in China have performed over 336 million abortions and 196 million sterilizations. They've also inserted 403 million intrauterine devices. That's the latest data from China, as they keep excellent records, apparently, since everything is legal there, and records are kept. In the U.S., the Financial Times says, an estimated 50 million abortions have been performed since Roe versus Wade. Folks, I gave this speech in 2008, at the March for Life, where I posited the idea, my belief, that since abortion laws have been liberalized in the West and elsewhere, that there have now been over 1 billion surgical abortions performed. And I believe this data bears me out, because if you look at the population of China, 336 million abortions, and then factor in Russia, India, England, France, Germany, America, pick them all, folks, line up the nations, the so-called civilized nations that have liberalized abortion laws starting in the 20th century. And certainly since abortion became a right, so-called, there has been over 1 billion abortions. And I also, my research indicates that there now have been more innocent children killed by through abortion than all the deaths in all the wars and all the conflicts of all human history since Noah's flood. So how long, O Lord, will you continue to be patient and graceful with mankind as we slaughter your children? And now I have a prediction to make that with the new chemical abortifacients, we will reach 2 billion abortions, should the Lord tarry, in less than a third of the time that it took to reach the first billion abortions. One other note, just in case you were worried about global warming in regards to China and the East, as is our fearless admiral there, the birth restrictions in China have also led to a severe gender imbalance. There are now 34 million more men than women in China. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a terrifying figure. Not as terrifying as the billion abortions and the wrath and judgment that that shall bring upon the world, but a more existentially terrifying number. All right, more from the war file. Dozens of Coptic Christians have been tortured amid a wave of assaults targeting Christians in Benghazi and around Libya. Christians have been arrested on suspicion of proselytizing and have been beaten and tortured in prison. The family of one Coptic Christian who was arrested in Benghazi, what was the charge? He was charged with spreading Christianity. He says he was tortured. Another family says that a member of their family was also charged with proselytizing Christianity, and he was tortured to death in a detention center in the Libyan capital of Tripoli. The first word that dozens of Egyptian Christians had been detained in Libya spread after a video clip surfaced showing Libyan militiamen holding a group of Christian Egyptians. Their heads were shaved, and they had been charged with spreading Christianity. The story of the Coptic Christian detainees comes at the same time that the Libyan parliament has halted its session after being attacked by Islamic militiamen. The head of the parliament, in fact, barely escaped assassination last week. These are the militias that Barry armed so that we wouldn't have to put any boots on the ground to kill Muammar Gaddafi. So Barry chose to instead arm the Muslims, and now they are kidnapping, imprisoning, beating and torturing and killing both Libyan Christians and Coptic Egyptian Christians, of which there's a large community working in Libya. So, folks, when the Allies abandon the Christians, the Muslims will fill the governmental void. And so Barry Ho's leading from behind strategy has resulted in this type of thing with the Muslims filling the void. And folks, they're not only going to fill the void in Libya, but also in other countries like Germany, here in the United States, England, France. In fact, let's go to Germany. Germany's government has banned three anti-democratic Islamist groups. Germany says they can't tolerate Salafism, as represented by the groups that they banned last week. They say it's incompatible with Germany's peaceful democratic system. And so they've banned three different Islamic political parties. Now, according to this article from the BBC, there are believed to be about 4,000 active Salafists in Germany. A Salafist, by the way, is a Muslim who's a true believer in his Islamic religion and wants to institute the caliphate and Islam, and believes that Islam should rule the world. And the BBC says that there are believed to be about 4,000 activist Salafists in Germany out of a population of 4 million. So just 0.1% of the Muslims are active Salafists. But just 4,000 active Salafists within your borders is pretty scary to the Germans. And so they have... they have outlawed these three Islamic groups. I can't pronounce the names of them, or I'd tell you, but we don't have to worry about them. They're in Germany. Well, I mean, I guess unless you live in Dearborn, Michigan, you don't have to worry about them. In a related story from the politics file from the Financial Post, Deutsche Bank. Are we familiar with Deutsche Bank? It's the German central bank. Their head of global foreign exchange strategy, one Bilal Hafiz. Well, that right there. How many Germans do you know named Bilal Hafiz? I mean, something's going on in Germany, right? Well, Bilal Hafiz recently gave a speech at the annual Deutsche Bank Mittelstand in their foreign exchange conference in Hamburg, Germany. The speech focused on the euro area's economic woes. And here is what Deutsche Bank's global head of foreign exchange, Bilal Hafiz, had to say. He said, quote, "Who has entered the terrible teens? The Eurozone." That's right. He says the Eurozone was born in 1999 and is currently 14 years old. And it has all the hallmarks of teenage angst. It's ridden with internal conflicts. It's groping around for structure. And it is suspicious of authority. So who can be a positive role model for the Eurozone? Well, he says it cannot be the fathers, Germany or France. It has to be an external figure that all Europeans respect, one whose motives and character are beyond dispute. And Mr. Hafiz says that rules out anyone living. He said, "I can think of only one figure that is respected by most Europeans and has never sinned. Jesus." That's what Mr. Hafiz. He actually said, He actually implied that only Jesus can save the Eurozone. And now, I don't believe he was serious. I believe he was just trying to make a flip quip, you know? But he may not have been serious, but he is correct that only Jesus can save the Eurozone. And you can apply that to the whole rest of the world. I was just reading that the European bankers who are organizing the bailouts of these various socialist train wrecks in Europe, they have demanded 10% of the private bank accounts of all citizens of Cyprus. That's right. The Euro bankers want 10% off the top. So it's obvious they're not with Jesus, because Jesus said 10% is tyrannical. That's right. Have you read when Israel asked for a king back in 1 Samuel? In the 8th chapter, warning, 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 in danger, Will Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever dare consider the possibility of even mentioning a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered in 1 Samuel. The 8th chapter, Samuel warned the people, inspired by God. Samuel said, "If you get a king, he will take a tenth of your grain, and he will give it to his officers and his servants." That was a warning, right? Straight from Jesus Christ, who knows that 10% off the top is tyrannical. Anyway, what are the odds that the Europeans will turn to Jesus Christ? Well, I think they're fairly slim at this point, but where there's life, there's hope, and at least Bilal Hafiz realizes, whether he meant it seriously or not, that only Jesus can save the Eurozone. And only Jesus can save America. And only Jesus can save you, by the way. And if you want more information on that, well, go to denverbiblechurch.com. Or come on down and visit us. All right. Now, from that, I have to go to the bad religion file. And this is from a loyal listener, Paul, out in South Carolina, sent me this. A group of Sumter County, South Carolina religious leaders is sponsoring a prayer for educators. Yeah, Reverend Diane Hodgson says, quote, "We invite you, the administrators, teachers, and staff, and all workers at all levels within the public and private school system to come and join with us. We wish and desire to pray God's will and blessing upon you." She said, did I say he said? I'm sorry. The Right Reverend Diane Hodgson said this with a straight face, believe it or not. And she was joined by another pastor from Bethesda Church of God who said, "I honestly don't know how teachers do it." He said, "I pray for teachers because it has to be a very, very challenging career right now. My hope is that the teachers and administration would know that the community loves them and supports them." Yeah. He says, "This puts people together with one accord with whatever goals, purposes, and dreams the teachers and administrators have." Well, a note to the pastor there at Bethesda Church of God. The purposes, goals, and dreams of the teachers are to mislead, lie to, and eventually molest your children. And for you to be praying with them is akin to you praying with the owner of a house of ill repute. I mean, how often do these pastors get together and pray with the human traffickers that their purposes, goals, and dreams be fulfilled? Unbelievable. Do I have anything else from that? I have another quote from the Right Reverend Diane. She says, "Scripture talks about calling out to God in time of trouble, and we need that across the nation in every city. If we ask him for help, he's going to give it. But if we keep on going our own way, then we're going to stay in the situation we're in, and it's even going to get worse," unquote, said the Right Reverend Diane. Diane, my money is on worse. Because you are the post-conservative, you're a post-Christian pastor who believes that a government school that is dead set, hell-bent, opposed to teaching children, that they're the product of a creator and a judge, and teaching them that they're basically animals and that there is no God and there is no right or wrong. And you sit down and you pray over these people? My money's on worse, Pastor Diane, post-Christian pastor. It's amazing to me how many ignorant fools, deceivers, liars, and charlatans have found their way into the pulpits of America, and it's terrifying. Now let's take a look quickly, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to run through the domestic tranquility file, and we will look at some of the fruit that has been produced by the humanist tree that has grown up amongst us. From the New York Daily News, a Manhattan lawyer strapped her 10-month-old son to her chest and leapt to her death from an 8-story window in Harlem. Cynthia Wackenheim, a 44-year-old lawyer, left a suicide note castigating herself for being a bad mother. Yeah, she was convinced, according to the New York Daily News, that her baby had cerebral palsy. Although doctors interviewed afterwards said there was nothing wrong with the baby. Wackenheim's husband was at work when his wife jumped. He was spotted in surveillance video leaving the upscale building less than 3 hours before the leap. Neighbors said he stormed out of their 2-bedroom condo after a loud argument. The baby, his name is Keston, He survived with just a few scratches. The Wackenheim was a Columbia Law School graduate. She was on maternity leave with her job at the city court system. She worked there for more than 15 years doing research and writing for judges. And all those years of lawyering in the secular humanist tree obviously drove her insane. It's amazing that the boy is expected to survive, and he had a CT scan, and he appears to be fine. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. A six-month-old baby has died after she was shot last week while her father was changing her diapers. Where else? That's right, Chicago. Police said the incident has very strong gang overtones, and the father has an extensive criminal history, and that he was the intended target. He survived. The father had known gang affiliations. Now, earlier that same day, ironically enough, Chicago Police Superintendent Gary McCarthy touted progress in his department's efforts against crime. He says, as of last Monday, shooting incidents in the city are down 19%. He says, we have a lot of work to do, but we are making progress. All right, this is not the same country that I grew up in. Case in point, Fairless Hills, Pennsylvania. A man entered Dick's Sporting Goods stores in Fairless Hills last Saturday night, asked to see a shotgun and ammunition. Once the clerk handed them over, the man pulled out a handgun and ordered the worker to unlock the shotgun's gun lock. The man then barricaded himself in the bathroom and killed himself with the shotgun. The man had been involved in a police standoff back in 2002. Not the same country I grew up in. I never heard of anyone going into a gun shop and doing anything violent. You know, I ask myself, is it possible that as a culture, we are so godless and out of control that perhaps we cannot be trusted with guns anymore? I ask myself that. As I cling to my guns and my religion, I wonder, is there a segment of society out there that has become fairly significant that simply cannot be trusted with guns any longer? Case in point, Anchorage, Alaska. Daniel Pirtle has been charged with assault. According to police, he entered a Walmart. He's a paraplegic. He entered a Walmart in a motorized cart at about 3 in the afternoon. He went to the sporting goods section where he was asked by the manager to put his dog. He had one of those service dogs. He was asked by the manager to put his dog on a leash. So the quadriplegic pulled out a gun and shot the manager. The store remained open. Despite the violence, it was never closed. Not the same country I grew up in. From the Justice File, from CNN, a man from Cicero, Illinois, is accused of abducting a 47-year-old mother and her daughter last week after they left a gymnastics class. He tied the mother up and raped the daughter. He then drove the car a short distance down the road where the mother was fatally stabbed. The young girl managed to escape. The man has been charged with rape, kidnapping, murder. What makes me sick about this story is that this man had been ordered to wear an electronic tracking device on his ankle while he awaited trial on child pornography charges. He had been told by authorities to stay home between the hours of 9 p.m. and 7 a.m., and they put an electronic bracelet on his ankle so they could enforce their will and create a situation in which he could not commit a crime. Well, this degenerate was able to remove the strap of his electronic device and then reconnect it quickly enough that it did not call his probation officer. He then left the device in his home before he left to attack these two young women. And ladies and gentlemen, I report this story not as an argument for better tracking devices. I offer this story as a convincing argument for a swift, painful, and public death penalty. Had this man been brought to trial quickly and executed on the child pornography charges, these two women may very well be with us today. And the justice system may very well have prevented future crimes. All right. One more from the science, really, file. From Geneva in Europe, the Associated Press reports that physicists have announced that they believe they have discovered the subatomic particle predicted nearly half a century ago, which will go a long way toward explaining what gives electrons and all matter in the universe size and shape. That's right, the elusive Higgs boson has been discovered. And many scientists theorize that the particle will help fill our understanding of the creation of the universe, which many theorize occurred in a massive explosion known as the Big Bang. They've gone over all the preliminary results, and indeed they believe they have found the Higgs boson, the atom smasher there in Europe, the Large Hadron Collider, has been creating high-energy collisions of protons to investigate how the universe came to be and how it came to be the way it is. But because these physicists, the vast majority of them, are part of the post-conservative, humanist, secular tree that has grown up among us, they've eliminated the biblical account of creation from the equation. And therefore, all of their observations of the Higgs boson and any other particles are hopelessly futile and in the end will be deceptive and will lead to their own condemnation. So there we have it. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week, folks. I want to thank my extremely attractive audio engineer, my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, I will return and be with you again next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.